This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Saturday Magazine, sponsored by Velocity Rewards,
your award-winning loyalty program for Virgin Australia's frequent flyers.
Hey, you. Yeah, you, in the car. Did you know that a big portion of people who listen to Joy in the car, just like you? Right now, times are really tough financially, and without your support, Joy may not be around to make your drive around Melbourne fun. So tell your siblings, your workmates, heck, even wind down your window and tell someone else stuck in the traffic to head over to joy.org.au and help us build Joy Nation by making a donation. Joy, your voice, your radio station.
This is Saturday Magazine.
You're listening to Saturday Magazine. We're getting in the last quarter hour, Macca.
We are, and we're continuing our theme, our third guest to talk to us about, try and give us some understanding of just what is going on in the United States, is Timothy J. Lynch, Associate Professor in American Politics from Melbourne University. Good morning, Timothy. How are you?
Good morning, gentlemen. I'm very well. Please call me Tim.
Tim, okay. Tim, look, we've been speaking about the voting system in the US, you know, how a lot of police captains, you know, prosecutors, attorneys general are elected, and as well as judges.
We've been talking about the presidential crisis, so to speak.
We've been talking about a crisis, about Black Lives Matter. You know, as from a political perspective, you know, Donald Trump is a very clever man, isn't he? He knows... He's actually got an orchestra of dog whistles. He's very clever.
Yes, well, he's. I don't think any man, they've all been men so far, gets to that position through idiocy. They all embody a certain cunning, and not least Trump himself. So, I think what's one of the things we marvel over, certainly his opponents marvel over, that despite being grossly deficient in lots of what we assume to be recognized political skills, he's managed not just to become president, but to retain a popularity, a fervent, dedicated popularity amongst a demographic within the United States that people for decades have sought to ignore or to and yet have done very little to appease. So I think as we move away from the heat around his presidency, some of not just his inanities and absurdities, but some of his skills will become part of the historical re-evaluation.
Do you think, okay, Trump appeals to his base, and we see lots of politicians do that. You know, in Australia, we see it in South America, we see it in Asia. Well, we see it everywhere. Appealing to your base, and everyone else who's not in your base basically can piss off. Trump has, you know, he needs a certain amount of people to vote for him. If I was to ask you, If a US election was going to be held next week or the week after, November's a bit far away, so much can happen. But do you think Trump would win if an election was held now?
Well, I think if you just looked at the polling as it stands in the current moment, you would say not, if that polling translated into actual voting behaviour. He's fallen behind as a result of COVID and the race riots. So, and you need to look at the six states that he managed to switch in 2016 and ask how is his polling going there. And he's behind by between a couple of points and 7 or 8 points. So on that basis, his advantage in the Electoral College would evaporate if the election were held tomorrow in the next week. But of course it's not. It's being held. We've got 4.5 months of considerable turmoil, let me suggest and predict, before people are asked to evaluate his performance formally. And that strikes me as a long time in American politics.
Tim, you recently wrote a piece for the Conversation, and you explored the topic of the president and whether the president may be in crisis. Talk to us a bit about that. Do you think that the presidency in the US is in crisis?
Well, it's in crisis in a narrow way, but I think in an ahistorical way, because we tend to dwell on the character of Trump himself, which I agree is exceptional and extraordinary. And but this, what he represents in terms of the state of the presidency is much more important, I think. And in some ways, what we're dealing with here, despite its pretensions to being the most powerful office in the world, is actually one of the most imperiled, insecure political positions in world politics. Because, I mean, this is for lots of different reasons, which Trump has magnified but didn't create. Not least is the fact that he I'm going to keep saying he until until that does change, but the president has to face a system which is deliberately organized to thwart his agenda.
Yes.
So whenever he thinks he's got political capital momentum, particularly winning a national election, the only a nationally elected figure, he is faced by a Congress which is not nationally elected and represents all sorts of different competing interests. And there are 535 of those men and women who have a very profound institutional connection, even before you factor in the role of politics. And you've got a judicial system, which is not elected, largely not elected, on the federal level, which is separate from his control. Obama faced the same set of challenges. And what I found remarkable, even though we've learned to vilify Trump and eulogize and applaud Obama, is just how similar their failure has been. Because they promised their followers, yes, of which there are millions, and they're fervent and dedicated, for both men still. And yet they have to realize that political advantage in a system which is designed to deny it to them. So I think Trump, in 100 years' time, when we've forgotten Donald Trump in terms of his peculiarities, we'll look at him and Obama, and I think of Bush before, even Clinton. I think you'll look at all the post-Cold War presidents in terms of the decline of presidential power and how inept and impotent they've become in the face of pressures that they're elected to try and do something about.
So you're really saying the system's broke, and here we've got a sequence of characters who've held the office of the presidency and really haven't been able to shift very much.
Well, they haven't had the legislative ability, Tass, and probably the last president that did was Lyndon Johnson in his first few years.
Yes, Tass and Mackey have opened up a whole set of absolutely fascinating debates which remain central to American politics. Now, I would dispute the idea that we're in a more profound period of crisis in terms of the presidency than we were previously. The system, at the very beginning, was designed to check to empower a president, to give him energy to execute a national agenda, but to control him so he didn't become a repetition of a monarch. And we're still working through some of the after effects of that. We expect, and let me speak in terms of some caricatures here, and it particularly pertains to Australian politics. We have a notion that government is there to do stuff for people, to provide them healthcare or give them rights and education. Whereas the American conception of power at the beginning, and it still echoes through its deliberations now, is founded on a fundamental mistrust of the accumulation of power.
Yes.
A government that can do good things, like healthcare, can do bad things, like repression, or like the Vietnam draft. So whatever power is given must be checked by a power to take that, yes, to take those powers away. That hasn't changed. We're seeing a particularly trying moment of it. But American politics, all human life is in the American experiment. It's too Puritan, it's too liberal, it's too licentious, it's too controlling, it's too pornographic, it's too religious, everything. And every race and color and creed, every gender, sexual orientation, in some ways finds room to fight for its particular cause. There's no other nation on earth which is characterized by this ongoing conflict amongst human beings. The wonder is that it survived as well as it has, accrued as much power and strength that it has, given that it's set up in such a way that conflict is promoted. That's the wonder. So it's not on the edge of the precipice of an imminent decline. In fact, I think it's facing a profound test of its founding creed. which every part of American politics, every section, racial, demographic, sectional, whatever it is, have all sought to try and exploit and find recognition within. And I think we're seeing a rerunning of that in this particular moment, particularly in racial, but also in socioeconomic terms.
Wow, Tim, you've just raised so many issues. It's almost hard to know where to begin. But I have to say, as a reader in American politics, as a reader of American politics, where do you think we will be in 6 months' time? What's the state of American politics going to look like?
Well, it's a very good question, and of course, I don't make predictions because they're always wrong.
Please do, though. I'm fascinated now.
We won't tell anyone.
My default position on this, gentleman, is to believe that there's far more continuity in American politics than there is revolution. This is not a system with, despite some of those marching and protesting at the moment, it's not a system which is conducive to revolution. It's why Marxists have never got on with America, because there's no one building you could lay siege to.
Yes.
And have a revolution. You did it to the White House, you then got Congress, do Congress, you then got the Supreme Court, you take out the whole of Washington. You've got another 50 states all replicating those power structures. So it's not a state which is easily changed, which is why it's been very durable through all sorts of peaks and troughs across nearly 24 decades. So my hunch is that this is a moment which is awful in some of its dynamics, but is no more awful and probably a good deal less than it was. Like, we could take our pick, but if we go back to 1968,
67, 68. Oh, yes. Yeah.
When Americans, their leaders were being assassinated. I think here of Martin Luther King and of Robert Kennedy. And young men, black and white, were being drafted into an illegitimate war. Why did they seen as illegitimate? Nearly 60,000 were killed, with attendant race riots and class warfare back home. I would say that where we are now, even though it's
not that different,
it's in fact I would say benign is strong, but I think it's less severe. I think the consequences that people are marching against, what they're actually protesting, is not as profound as what they were protesting
in 1968.
That's a very, very sobering conversation that you're having with us, Tim. It's almost not what I was hoping to hear for. I was actually hoping to hear a sense of optimism going forward, and you're not giving me that.
I'm happy to be optimistic. I think it does, over the long term, reward optimism. But don't expect a system grounded in notions of personal liberty to be devoid of turmoil.
Yeah.
You will have contestation. Mm. I mean, this is too convenient an argument, but let me suggest the passions that we've seen on the streets of American cities suggest there is still a profound contestation over what America represents.
Yeah.
It is not a languid system in which people just relax and are in long-term repose. It's a continual struggle over what the appropriate political settings are for the human condition. And let me suggest to you, those are beyond easy, but you cannot realize those straightforwardly. All they are is an ongoing debate over good and bad.
You know what, Tim? You've earned yourself an extended spot in the studio. When we can do this in person, because there's always something missing in person. Look, I thank you for your time this morning. We've actually run out of time. We've spent three segments on the US. I'm a bit of a student of American political history, and I agree with you. The system they have actually inhibits the power of the president but encourages it. So it's a bit of a dichotomy. Thanks for your time, and we look forward to speaking to you again soon.
Saturday Magazine on Joy 94.9, proudly sponsored by Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.